So, they say you're the bad guy.
Is that what they say?
It's a dorky-looking helmet. What's it for?
This dorky-looking helmet is the only thing that's going to protect me from the real bad guys. What's your name?
John.
What's your real name, John?
Pyro.
What a talent you have there, Pyro.
I can only manipulate the fire. I can't create it.
You are a god among insects. Never let anyone tell you different.
Great clip.
That is my favorite scene in the movie. I think by far. It's not to jump right into it, but that is to me at least that is the thesis of this movie is again playing off the first, that idea of no, you're not just kind of better than them. You're so much better than them and you don't even realize it. And that's how Magneto, that's how he gets you.
Yep. So this is part two of our X-Men series. We're talking about X2, one of the most highly regarded superhero movies of all time, from 2003. Different composer.
Yeah, also the editor. So that guy was busy.
Indeed.
John Ottman? Yeah, John Ottman. I don't think I've ever heard of that before. The composer also being the editor.
That's very bizarre, but I guess he's close personal friends with Bryan Singer.
Is he now?
Allegations have not been levied against him.
I'll bet you he has some stories.
As far as I know.
Allegedly, no allegations have been alleged.
Yeah.
We're finally doing X2. My first note on this movie is just, this is the good one. And I don't mean just X-Men. I think this is like one of the best superhero movies ever made. Maybe my favorite.
I agree. Right from the beginning, that scene with Nightcrawler attacking the president in the Oval Office is just fantastic.
This is very much the Empire Strikes Back of Star Wars or of X-Men movies, probably for more ways than one. But
it actually follows that if you think about it, because the third can be compared to
Return of the Jedi.
I mean, it really can.
Yeah, and I very much in the same vein of The Empire Strikes Back, this movie gets the big, or at least one of the big action set pieces out of the way right up front.
Yeah.
That's what Empire Strikes Back does too, where it's, okay, this is not going to be a super action-y movie. This is going to be a very restrained movie. So let's do a big action thing first, get it done, and then we can move on to the stuff we really want to talk about, which is the talky bits.
Right.
But boy, what a banger of an opening this movie has.
Absolutely. They couldn't have nailed Nightcrawler more perfectly, but we'll get into the stats before we get going here.
Let's do it. Once again, this movie was allegedly directed by Bryan Singer. That cannot be confirmed, of course. I'm kidding. as we mentioned, composed and edited by John Ottman. I don't normally note that, but I just think it's kind of interesting that the same guy did both those jobs. On a budget of $110 million, so bigger budget than the last movie, but the last was very successful. Box office was $407 million. So again, very successful, but Spider-Man, which came out the year before, did twice that. Spider-Man made over $800 million, which is pretty crazy. I think I chalk that up mostly to just Spider-Man being a little more accessible, a little more kid-friendly. There's less like horrific psychological torture and long conversational bits and all that. Just think that's interesting. Box off or Rotten Tomato score 85%, which too low. Metacritic score 68%. That's wild. I know Metacritic is the harsh one.
It is.
But man.
7.4 IMDb and an 85 is across the board on Rotten Tomatoes with audience and critic.
Interesting.
That's a first movie too, the same thing.
Huh. Okay.
It went from 83 to 85. So both are highly regarded.
Yeah, highly regarded. I mean, I think this is a better than 3% jump in quality over the first one.
Have you heard the story about Professor X's wheelchair in this movie?
No.
Okay, so there was a lawyer who bought that wheelchair like as a, you know, like collector's item like type a prop thing. Well, now they needed the wheelchair back for this movie.
So he bought it after the first movie?
Correct.
Okay, and then they need. Okay, now they need it. All right.
So he rented it back to the studio for them to use that. Why wouldn't they just fucking build a new wheelchair?
Why'd they sell the first wheelchair?
I don't know, dude.
That's the $100 million movie, and you couldn't get a new wheelchair?
Did they not think they were like gonna get a sequel out of this?
Yeah, that.
I guess the studio was actually kind of weary in the beginning.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
They weren't sure this was gonna be successful.
The first was successful.
I know.
That's interesting.
It is.
The only thing I could compare that to, I guess, is like the Batman. You know, the Batman came out, it was very successful, and then still for a solid year, it was like, oh, are they gonna green light a sequel? Well, why wouldn't they? It's the only thing that DC's done that's made money in the last 10 years.
Yeah, no shit.
That and Joker. Okay. Weird. That is bizarre.
So you wanted to talk about the thesis of this movie.
Yeah. And I mean, as I was writing this stuff, I was thinking like, what is the central, you know, thesis of this movie? Unfortunately, the more I thought about it, the more I was like, maybe there isn't any one. Again, it's a lot of opposing viewpoints coming at you, talking about things, in this case, mutants, but you could layer that onto so many other things in the real world.
Right.
I guess that's an opportunity to talk about the villain, William Stryker, because he has a very much a point of view that is different than Magneto's and obviously different than Professor Xavier. But he's a guy who could exist in the real world and probably has existed in the real world. A radicalized man with a government behind him who's going to do whatever it takes to keep people safe. That's why I was asking you earlier about what is the Homelander quote, which is the...
Peacemaker.
A peacemaker, excuse me. I always get them confused. I cherish peace with all my heart. I don't care how many men, women, and children I need to kill to get it, which is a great quote from Peacemaker in Suicide Squad. And that's what I was thinking the whole time when I was watching William Stryker. It's like, oh yeah, this is the guy. This is the guy who will say, I'll do anything to achieve safety, even if I have to kill millions of people. It's like, God, that could be Henry Kissinger.
His character in this movie, what's the actor that plays him?
Brian Cox.
He's a combination of a few villains from the comics. Reverend William Stryker, an anti-mutant bigot. Professor Andre Thornton, the malevolent mastermind of the Weapon X program. And Henry Peter Gyrich, who we know from the cartoon.
Oh, yeah, okay.
They've used all three of these in the cartoon and the comics, obviously.
Uh-huh.
He was a ruthless government official who dedicates his life and resources to destroying the mutant populace.
Yeah, he wants to kill every mutant.
Initial script writing for this, too, had the Sentinels heavily involved in this. But I think it's too much money and...
I think for the technology of that moment, probably a little too much to bite off.
Even in Days of Future Past, which we'll get to at some point, uh-huh. I don't feel like they did the Sentinels right. I don't know. I wasn't expecting the 1970s design.
Mm-hmm.
Because it looks goofy.
It looks very goofy.
But I don't know. I was hoping to get something better out of that. But the Sentinels, to me, like, are such a huge part of X-Men.
Yeah.
They stick out. I mean, they. I remember the fondly from the cartoon, like, constantly being involved with the Sentinels.
The one episode of the cartoon I rewatched was the pilot.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're there immediately. The first thing you see before you see Magneto or anything else. You see a sentinel.
Yeah.
And it's like right there.
Mm-hmm.
You see Gambit sexually harassing a clerk, and then sentinels. It's like one and two. I'm not making that up. Go back and watch it.
No.
And I feel like every bit of trivia I hear about every X-Men movie is like, they really wanted to do the sentinels, but they just couldn't do it. And it's like, yeah, okay, I get that. That's a lot of budget for this time. Personally, I think it works out for the best. I like this movie being more
grounded.
It's so grounded. It's so restrained. In the first movie, it's all about, not all about, but it's the X-Men fighting the Brotherhood of Mutants. So it's a lot of mutant on mutant fights using their powers, which is really cool. It's very comic booky. In this one, I think there's one mutant on mutant fight, and it's Wolverine and Death
Lady
Deathstrike at the end. And that's, we'll get there, but that's a great, I like that scene a lot. But this one is just all dialogue, viewpoints, philosophy. I mean, you get your fun little action-y moments, you know, you get the fun stuff too, but it's so restrained.
Well, you go ahead and talk about philosophy, and I'll be the fucking meathead who just lights up like a 10-year-old boy when we get to the attack on the school, but...
I like the attack on the school.
I'll get there in a minute. So okay. Magneto is back in this plastic prison.
Yeah.
Mystique is still being Senator Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
So she's trying to find out where they're holding Magneto.
Yeah.
Right?
Can I ask you if you noticed something? Because I've noticed this forever, and maybe it's just in my own head. I've always noticed that when Mystique takes the character or takes the form of somebody in these movies, that person always acts a little more feminine.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm not the only one seeing this.
It's blatantly obvious when she morphs from Kelly to Lady Deathstrike. When she's walking in that courtyard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Because, yeah, I've even thought that the actor who played Kelly, as he's Mystique playing Kelly,
yes,
that he's playing it a little more...
He's kind of got a more feminine walk.
Yeah.
And gestures, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, good. I'm glad I'm not crazy, because I've thought this since I was a child.
Holly Berry drops the accent in this.
I had that exact note in here. Halle Berry finally gave up on the accent, but she does at least have more to do in this movie. Yeah,
absolutely.
And on the accent note, Hugh Jackman, kind of going in and out of Australian for a few scenes. Again, there's a couple of moments where I was like, oh, you almost got him.
Let's get this out of the way right now, the Bond connections here.
Let's do it.
Alan Cumming, how do you say it?
Famke Janssen.
Famke Janssen. Mm-hmm. And Holly Berry,
yep.
All Bond connections.
Yep. Obviously, two of those were in the first, and then Alan Cumming was Boris in GoldenEye, the computer programmer.
64 sets were used in 38 different locations. That's filmmaking.
That's filmmaking right there.
Fuck yeah, it is, dude.
That's kind of wild, too, because, yeah, no, now that I think about it, there are so little... Everything feels very practical. It all feels very tactile. Which is a thing you definitely don't get anymore. I mean, we kind of talked last time about how these movies maybe feel like time capsules, like good examples of pre-MCU Marvel movies.
Yeah.
And again, this is just not how you would make this movie these days. These days, it would take place in the quantum realm, and I don't know, William Stryker would be an evil 16-year-old girl. I don't know.
The Danger Room was also planned to be in this.
Every time.
So I think Bryan Singer had huge ideas.
Yeah.
And Fox had to kind of rein him in. He didn't give him the money he was looking for. Like these budgets you see these days for the fucking Ant-Man mm-hmm. are just, you know.
Well, money well spent as far as I'm concerned.
But even like the Marvels and shit like that, just astronomical budgets.
Yeah, I mean, these days a $200 to $300 million budget is not uncommon. I mean, Madam Web, the biggest bomb of all time now. Apparently, that movie did not cost $80 million. It cost $100 million. So, yeah, I mean, it's out of control these days. But, again, I think being forced to rein it in a little bit can be good for the movie, too.
They do have the Danger Room in part three, but we'll get there.
Do they really?
Yes, they do.
I don't remember that at all. I've seen three once.
And a Sentinel.
I don't remember that either.
It's like a hologram.
The only thing I remember about three is the horrible de-aging, Magneto moving the Golden Gate Bridge... I think that's it. Probably for the best. I saw that movie once in theaters, and I said, "Wow, I'm done."
Yeah, they were to get to the Sentinels. It was going to cost $7 million to animate that.
And when your budget's 110, that's a pretty big chunk of a budget for one thing.
Yeah, and then as we get further into these, like, it's interesting. Not only do they have Sentinels, but they also have Nimrod. Do you remember Nimrod?
No.
Okay. I'll have to send you a clip of Nimrod because he was also in the animated show.
Okay, I don't remember that. Nimrod is a Green Day album to me.
Angel and Beast were also a part of the script,
mm-hmm.
and they ended up cutting them out.
Okay.
In this, they do appear in X3.
Great, good. Can't wait. I'm sure that'll be done well.
Yeah, I don't think Angel's in it very much.
I actually do remember Angel in that movie.
He swoops in and rescues him at the end. I forgot.
Well, he's also the one that I believe is like cutting his wings off in the beginning.
Yes.
That's pretty terrifying.
That is terrifying. Yeah. So let's talk about the philosophy.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, it's we'll talk more about it as we when we talk about the big grand plan, but it's three different opposing viewpoints. It's let's all live together, kumbaya. It's mutants are superior, but Magneto's also not looking to like kill everyone, well, until the end. And then Stryker, who's just radical. And it's that philosophy, and I'm so glad he is what he is. He's a military scientist working within the government, but he works very much along the lines of the CIA, where he has high authority, but like the president doesn't really seem to know what he gets up to. Nobody really seems to know. He's just kind of out of control, and that's very accurate for how things like the CIA work.
Stryker knows what's going on in the X mansion. They've got X-ray visions of the Blackbird underneath the mansion,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, well, what is a jet doing there? Well, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But we know it comes out, you know, and so...
comes out from underneath the basketball court.
They do a good job of... it's not just black and white. Like, there's no reason at all for the government to, like, be weary. Not just of mutant kind, but the X-Men in particular. Because, mm-hmm. like, what the fuck are they doing with a military jet sure. underneath this mansion?
Right? Very, very similar to the first, where it's like, you... like we said in the first, or I said in the first movie, like the rhetoric they use to talk about mutants is not terribly far off of the rhetoric we use to talk about any group that we don't like or understand or we want to demonize.
It's kind of like WMDs.
I was actually thinking about the WMD thing, right? Where it's yeah. like, well, we don't really know what they're doing with this. And because we don't know what they're doing with this, we should probably kill a lot of them. Right? I mean, come on. Yeah. It's the same thing.
It is.
This was 2003. 2003 was a big year for making horrible mistakes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's the same concept. There's still a kernel of you understand where the guy's coming from.
Yeah,
you get why Senator Kelly wants to register the mutants, because if you have people who can walk through walls and teleport places and shoot lasers out of their eyes, you might want to know what they're up to.
Sure.
And if you have this rogue group that has a military grade jet under their basketball court, you might want to keep an eye on them.
Absolutely.
So there's always that little kernel where you're right. like, we get it, we get right. where you're coming from.
Right. Logan in the beginning has gone to, I forget the name of the island.
I don't remember it either, but it's where they end up.
It's like in Alaska, yeah, or yeah. something like that, or the border of Canada.
Yeah, it's Canada.
Fucking no.
I don't know where it's supposed to be, but it's Canada.
Yeah, and there's nothing there.
Yeah, because it's all underground.
Yeah, it's covered in ice. Comes back, tells Professor X that, and he's like, we'll talk later, I gotta go to Washington.
Yeah.
So they ask Logan if he can babysit the kids.
The best babysitter.
Yes.
The chain-smoking alcoholic.
I love the scene in the kitchen where he's having a heart-to-heart with Iceman, who is trying to fuck Rogue, but he doesn't know how.
I love that scene. I think it's nice. It's very humanizing.
Yes.
Again, like, it's a very non-MCU thing, where if that conversation happened in the MCU, it'd be rapid-fire quips, but they actually have a heart-to-heart. And yes, it is funny that Iceman is like just so horny through this whole movie. He's just like, I so desperately want to have sex, but I cannot figure out how.
So we also come to find out that Magneto is being brainwashed and beaten in his cell,
mm-hmm.
and telling Stryker everything about the X-Men. And this is how he knows about Cerebral and everything else.
Stryker seems to have a drug that can control mutants, mm-hmm. make them do things they don't want to do, make them spill their guts. And Magneto has been subjected to this. So he has told them everything.
So when Professor X goes to see him, he's like, my God, Eric, what have you done? What have you told them? Mm-hmm. And he says everything. So then Cyclops gets the fuck beat out of him, and he's pretty much out of the movie again.
Yeah.
Hashtags justice for Cyclops.
Justice for James Marsden. Bring him back. Let him be the MCU Cyclops. Who cares? We said this last time, but the guy still looks 35. Let him be Cyclops. He can be the older, more established leader.
He's even more of a jabroni in this movie than he was in the first movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He's even like a villain for a minute. This movie is so restrained and doesn't focus on the powers so much that when Professor X and Magneto are having that scene where Professor X figures out that Magneto's told him all this stuff, I wasn't even thinking about mutant powers. So I was like, well, how did Professor X know that something happened to Magneto? And then I was like, oh, yeah, he can just read everybody's mind. Of course he knows what's happened.
They do introduce Pyro in this as well. Mm-hmm. There's a museum scene where they're at like a field trip. You can kind of see Pyro is a bit of a troublemaker, and Professor X freezes everybody in the museum. all those extras were mimes.
I knew that, actually.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, though.
That is cool.
I made a note of that scene. Good foreshadowing, because that power will become relevant later.
Yeah.
It was during that scene where I made a note where I was like, to go back to the Star Wars analogy, Professor X is basically Yoda, where he's so, not only is he's the old wise one, but if we're doing like power rankings, he's so powerful that you never really seem to know how powerful he is. But then he does something crazy, like stops time.
Yeah.
And makes people disappear. And it's like, how, and apparently he can just kill everyone on the planet if he thinks about him hard enough.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, how powerful is he?
Yeah.
It's the Yoda thing where it's like, Yoda's so powerful, he doesn't need a lightsaber. He doesn't need to fight. He's just Yoda.
Yeah.
That gets ruined, but I digress. To go back to Cyclops in that scene for a minute too, before we lose him from the movie entirely. Yeah. I'm also very confused by how powerful his laser eyes are, because he gets a laser eye blast in on Deathstrike, Deathstroke, what?
Deathstrike.
Lady Deathstrike. I don't know. And she just kind of like brushes it off.
Yes.
And I know she's basically a Wolverine too, but what are those? What does that laser do? Sometimes it blows people up. Sometimes it just pushes you over.
He literally blew the fucking roof off of a place in the first one.
Yeah.
But not here.
No, it's yeah, it's that classic, like, it's the James Bond thing. If the script needs the car to blow up, the car blows up. And if the script needs the car to not blow up, it doesn't blow up.
Yeah.
Anyway. And now Cyclops is gone. We're not going to see him for another hour and a half, so.
So they siege the mansion. And this scene is fucking awesome. Because Wolverine is just un-fucking leashed in this scene. The only thing that's missing is like the brutality, like the blood and guts.
Yeah, and there's a part of me that would have loved to have seen the sort of John Wick version of this scene where Wolverine can just be unleashed and you let it get gory and weird and gross. It's PG-13. There's basically no blood. I get it.
There's not, but I mean, he is shoving his claws all the way into dudes' chest cavities.
Yeah.
Slicing fools' throats. I mean, he is just killing people fucking left and right, dude.
Wolverine does not have the same sensibilities as maybe some of the other X-Men have. He's under attack and he's going to kill everyone in his way.
I love it too, because the guy with the machine gun comes in and like Iceman just scared shitless. Mm-hmm. And Wolverine just comes behind him. You picked the wrong house, bub.
Yeah.
Shoves him against the wall. Oh! Shoves both of his claws right into his chest cavity. And then Iceman just looking like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. And like I said, he is running through the mansion and just fucking wrecking fools left and right.
Well, I mean, I guess that's why you leave somebody like him to be the babysitter, just in case shit goes down.
There's one scene where they got all the kids like trapped. Mm-hmm. And he just jumps off of the top of the balcony and just stabs two guys.
I really like that shot.
Oh, yeah.
This scene is like, I enjoy this scene. It's fun. It's a bit of fun, right? To me, it's like, no, go back to the talky bits. I want to hear the talking.
Oh, stop.
I want to hear eight X-Men in a room for 3 hours debating their points in black and white. That's what I want. Give me that X-Men movie. but this is a really fun scene. And you know, you get a little bits of some of the X-Men who are going to be important later on, too.
Colossus
is the one I was thinking
Great
of.
Great scene.
That's a really weird one when Colossus says to, because he's clearly, some of these kids are kids, they're like 12. Yeah. Colossus is clearly like 17, 18, like he's about to be an adult. And says to Wolverine, hey, I can help you. If I'm Wolverine, I'd be like, yeah, you're right, you can. Come on. You're made of metal and you're indestructible.
Yeah,
and you're bigger than me. Let's go take on some of these guys. Because, I mean, Wolverine has, you know, he's got his healing powers, but he's not indestructible. He can be killed.
Very tough to.
Very tough to.
At least in the comics.
Yeah, I know. Very tough to, but still. Anyway, that's another thing. I think we mentioned it last time that I like about these movies, which is that the adults are adults and the kids are kids.
Yeah.
And there's no like, suit up, 11-year-old. We're going into battle. Make sure to do some quips so the kids in the audience like you, which is what we would get, which is what we probably are going to get these days.
I mean, something similar to that happens in Love and Thunder.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What?
Oh, God. Thor gives like all the kids like powers of the hammer, and they're all like flying and punching guys and shit like that. Yeah. I told you, bro.
Who wrote this stuff?
As bad as you might think some of these are, you haven't seen shit till phase worse. 4. Yeah.
As much as I hate Thor the Dark World, there's deeper depths to plumb.
Love and Thunder is so bad.
Yeah. I'm probably never going to see that.
Yeah. It's awful.
And if I do, that'll be a drinking on the couch viewing.
It's terrible.
And that's what I like about this, where they say, no, you're kids. And, you know, same thing. A lot of them have, they have powers, obviously, but they're not indestructible. They're not superheroes in that they can take a nuclear missile. And I just like that there's that distinction that, like, no, let the adults handle this. You guys go. We'll catch up with you later.
They're not even relying on the teenagers to fight the battles.
No, they tell them to go. They tell them you're not ready for this.
Stryker shows up there, though, and is like, oh, my God, Wolverine, how long has it been? So they're setting up that, you know, he's the one that set up Weapon X. Mm-hmm. He's starting to have more flashbacks, things like that.
Yep.
And then Iceman puts the ice wall up and is like, we got to go.
I like that because Iceman's the one that kind of saves Wolverine. Yeah. And so that's kind of
nice. They look scared, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because Wolverine is like, go, I'll be fine.
Yeah, they don't know what they're going
to
do.
Rogue's like, well, we won't. Mm-hmm. You need to come with us, you know? So they end up going to Bobby Drake's house. Mm-hmm. Bobby Drake, Iceman, mm-hmm. his parents think he's at a boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes out as a mutant here, which I know you fucking love this too.
I was actually thinking that in this entire scene, well, multiple scenes, Bobby is in nothing but boxer shorts. And I'm sure all those scenes personally overseen by one Bryan Singer to make sure the quality of the shots was top notch. Anyway, sorry, moving on.
Bryan Singer was a co-producer of D.B. Cooper versus Bigfoot.
That's a reference. Two people
that's
are going to understand.
That's a deep cut there,
and
huh?
It's us. Yeah. Yeah, well. Anyway, sorry, that just popped into my head.
Go check it out, kids.
Yes, Bryan Singer. Maybe. Bryan Singer. Yeah, God, Bryan Singer. Yeah, so was Bobby Drake. He comes out. This is.
I don't think we talked about Bryan Singer too much in the last episode.
We touched on it.
We'll touch on it more, no pun intended.
Yeah, tell that to Bryan Singer. Whoa! No, I think we could do that now if you want. I mean, yeah.
You said you're going to get here, so might as well.
Yeah.
Because this is our last stop with him for a while.
Yeah, we're not going to see him again for a while because he unfortunately leaves the X-Men franchise to also make a terrible Superman movie. Mm-hmm. So we got a bad X-Men movie and a bad Superman movie. I'm not going to knock his filmmaking. I think he's very, very talented. These movies are good. He did The Usual Suspects. He's done really great stuff.
Agreed.
But I'm pretty sure we mentioned this last time. Yes, the rumors of Bryan. Have they even rumors? Like, Bryan Singer has certain proclivities. He likes to hire young men to be on his sets of age. Again, he's never not been accused of, like, a crime or anything like that. But it's pretty well out there that he uses his position of authority in Hollywood to be around younger men. Again,
they were all hired the day of their 18th birthday.
Again, who are all of legal age, and we are not alleging any wrongdoing here other than being a little weird.
He should have the pseudonym of that other director, Dick Chasen.
Oh, God. I've never heard that.
Yeah. You didn't hear that?
No.
I think his name is David Dakota, and he's actually directed like some actual movies.
Oh, I know. Okay, I know the name David Dakota. I don't know how I know that name, but I've never heard that he goes by Dick Chasen.
Okay, well, the gay porn that he does on the side, like uh-huh. D.B. Cooper versus...
Yeah. That's his,
he has am I saying that right?
Pseudonym?
Pseudonym.
Yeah.
Of Richard Chasen.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not lying.
Well, at least he's honest about it.
Exactly.
He's up front, I mean, right? Yeah. But if you're going to do those types of movies, then you're pretty much...
Right. So my point is, Bryan Singer is his biggest fan. Hey, there's nothing wrong with two consenting adults.
No.
There was some allegations of grooming, though.
Yes, I heard that. Actually, after last week's episode, I went home and read a little bit more about this, and he was... The thing that seems to have finally derailed Bryan Singer's career, because he has not worked much recently.
No.
He worked on that Queen movie a few years ago, Bohemian Rhapsody, and he was fired from that for... He directed that. And he was fired from that, and that was about the time... He was named in a lawsuit for, I don't know if it was assaulting or, you know, whatever, somebody who was underage at the time. That was the allegation. I don't think any charges were ever pressed or anything like that. It was probably settled, but that was kind of the end of his career. And honestly, like, it's kind of amazing that these rumors were out there for so long and he just kept working because he did. I mean, he left the X-Men movie, the next X-Men movie, but he was still a producer. He did the Superman movie. He was a producer on all the subsequent X-Men movies. He directed a couple later on.
Yeah.
Then he did a big Oscar biopic. I mean, the guy was working because he's super talented. But,
sure.
But yeah, I mean, I think in the post-Me Too world, I just don't think that stuff flies anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all we have. That's all we can say.
So getting back to Bobby Drake coming out.
One last thing about that. I think it's really... It's kind of sad how that all ended too, and that those rumors, quote unquote, are going to dog him forever, because he is a very talented director.
I agree.
I would love to see the, you know, him do one more X-Men movie or something like that, but it's never going to happen now. Mm. But yeah, do it to yourself.
Well, Bobby Drake's parents do not take too kindly of this reveal.
No, he literally comes out as he comes out.
Well, first of all, it's hilarious because they come home and like Logan's sitting there drinking a beer.
Mm-hmm.
But they go, have you ever tried not being a mutant? And you can see Bobby's, I want to talk about his brother.
Oh, yeah.
He's a big shithead. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't stand, I was hoping that Wolverine would just cut his fucking head off before they left. He's like huffing and puffing because he doesn't want this, you know, gay man, I mean, a mutant in his house. And so he runs upstairs and calls the police on them. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So they go outside and Wolverine's got his claws out. They're like, drop the knives. And he's like, I can't. And they shoot him right in the fucking head, which is a bit much.
I would say it might be overstepping bounds.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
When he's down, Pyro is like, what does he say? You hear about those bad mutants? Yeah, those, well, I'm the worst one.
Those mutants, you know, those mutants you're told you have to be afraid of? Well, yeah. I'm one of them or something like that. Yeah. And you know, yeah.
He needs to start Fair. Wrecking fools.
This is the action scene that I really like.
I love how he's lighting guys on fire, too. And like, they're just okay. Just a little burnt.
They're fine.
Yeah. PG-13.
Yeah. It's but a scratch.
Yes.
Yeah. That is funny. I never thought that they just fully shoot Logan in the head.
Yes, they do.
That's wild, yeah.
No questions asked.
No.
They shoot that black, I mean, that mutant in the head.
You said it, not me. Yeah. I was going to say, he's a white man. What are we doing here? He should get at least 100 more warnings.
I mean, if it was Bishop, I could understand.
Well, of course.
Anyhow. So, yeah, he's wrecking shit. This is very similar to the Magneto scene in X-Men 1.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's kind of like standing on a platform and just blowing up all these police cars.
Mm-hmm.
They get a hold of... Oh, shit. We completely forgot about Jean and Storm meeting Nightcrawler in the church.
Well, that's right. Well, we kind of glazed over the whole Nightcrawler thing other than saying the opening action scene is fucking awesome.
It's incredible, yeah.
But the whole point of it was that he's been... he's under the influence of Stryker's...
Same drug.
Poison, yeah, whatever that drug is. And he has been Manchurian candidated... to attack the president.
Right.
The idea being a mutant attack the president. We've really got to clamp down on these mutants. So it's Stryker manufacturing a crisis so that he can get more authority to go after more mutants.
Alan Cummings is fantastic as Nightcrawler.
He's perfect.
Perfect.
It's so interesting that, and I think he is in the comics too, I'm not sure, but it's so interesting that he's very religious.
He was, at least back in the day.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what the fuck's going on, because like I told you, there is a storyline where Mystique grew a dick, came inside of a woman, they're lesbians or something, and they had Nightcrawler.
Okay.
So they retconned like some of his backstory.
Well, if that was my backstory, I'd find God too, so that kind of makes sense that he's super religious.
Iceman is also gay in the comics now, where before he was like... just the ladies, man, like from hell.
Uh-huh. No, so. he got sick of trying to figure out how to have sex with Rogue, and he was like, I'll just go jerk a dude off. This is way easier.
Well, see, in the comics, it was always Rogue and Gambit. And then for a while, I believe Rogue was with Magneto. There was a storyline about that, too.
Oof. That just cracks me up because there was a Family Guy joke that Iceman was gay.
Is that right?
Yeah, his wife was accusing him of being gay, and he was like, what are you talking about? I'm not gay. Why would you even say these things? And she's like, excuse me. And then you see like one of his like little ice slides leading straight into a gay bar across the street. Family Guy is quickly becoming The Simpsons, where they've done everything now.
I don't have a problem with like, you know, changing some stories and things like that. But when you try to have continuity from the older comics, and Marvel does this all the time. They put something out there to be like, look
at us.
Buy this edition of Iceman getting married to a dude.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go back. Or they'll kill somebody off. And then they go back.
X-Men number 36. Iceman sucking dick.
Riri Williams, the black teenage Iron Man.
Uh-huh.
they tried to get her to replace Tony Stark, and then Tony Stark came back. Like, they always do shit like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And we're 3 years away from them doing this in the movies too, right?
Stick to your guns is my point. Like,
yeah.
But the problem is they don't sell.
That's the thing, is you got to juice those sales occasionally.
They're finding that out now in the movies too.
You run out of ideas.
And it's got nothing to do really with, and this is just my opinion, I think it's because they're known commodities. And it's very hard to get out of that, right? Like, even an Indiana Jones movie is going to sell because it's Harrison Ford.
Sure, yeah.
You know what I mean? You see what I'm saying?
Well, you do it. Okay, sure, to enter my world. Let's do a James Bond movie, except James Bond's not in it. It'll be 006 and Moneypenny and M. It's like, right. Nobody cares.
You take that out and it's not as appealing.
Yep, totally. And you're right. The movies are learning this now. When you're relying on Ant-Man and Doctor Strange and second Captain America to be your big crew, it's just not as interesting. It's why Batman does it right. Batman doesn't move on to Nightwing. They just say, nope, new Batman.
Seeing Captain America, like, good example. Even if it was Bucky instead of the Falcon, no one would give a shit still, because it's Steve Rogers, Chris Evans, that's a star.
Mm-hmm.
That's the known commodity. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyhow.
It's doubly hard now with Marvel, the movies, because the kudos that I will give to Marvel, especially on their first run, was how absolutely perfect their casting was.
Agreed.
So not only did you cast an iconic character in, you know, Captain America, for instance, but you nailed it so hard with Chris Evans being Captain America that nobody's going to live up to that now.
No.
The biggest shame we talked about when we did our ranking, the biggest shame to me was Chadwick Boseman's Black Panther.
Yeah.
Like, great character, but such good casting.
Can't be replaced.
It cannot be replaced. You're never gonna top that.
No.
And now you're screwed. Now what do you do?
Exactly.
Yeah, you freak. Now you reboot, you recast, but you go back because you have to.
Yep.
All right, that's a bit of a tangent, but
I couldn't agree
more.
Hey,
it's why they keep bribing Hugh Jackman out of retirement to be Wolverine. He is Wolverine now.
That's the problem. These guys are all getting older too. Robert Downey Jr. is like 60 years old, and so is Hugh Jackman, right?
Hugh Jackman's pushing 60, I want to say. Yeah, I don't think he's quite there yet, but he almost is. And yeah. I mean, he can't do that forever, but they're going to have the same problem. Yeah. Let's say they recast Wolverine and, you know, whatever the new X-Men Marvel movie is. It'll just be called X. And it's not going to live up. I think we mentioned this last time, but my little prediction for the future X-Men, whatever they end up doing, there will not be a Wolverine first. Maybe not for like a movie or two. You're going to have to give that some time to breathe. And for God's sake, let Cyclops have a storyline this time, please. Just one.
That's funny.
Anyway, where were we?
Hugh Jackman's 56.
Okay, so there you go.
He's close.
Can't do this forever.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? Jeez, Logan was 8 years ago now, more than that, something like that. And he was old man Logan then, and now he's back for Deadpool.
This first X-Men movie should just focus on the original five.
I agree with that.
Cyclops, Angel.
Let's see if I can name him. Cyclops, Angel, Beast, Jean Grey, and...
We were just talking about him.
Bryan Singer?
Bryan Singer as Iceman.
Oh, Iceman, really?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. Yeah. All right, great. That's a good core four.
Yeah.
Or core five.
Yeah.
Yeah, just do that. Do a classic. It sounds like they're going to do the Fantastic Four movie as like a period piece. It's going to be set in the 60s. And then there'll probably be some shenanigans where they get transported to the future. Do that with X-Men too. Set it in the 60s. That'd be cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah, why not?
They can't help themselves, though. They're going to have Storm in it. I guarantee it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm fine with that. I mean, that's like... I like... keep it to the characters people know, at least.
Rogue, probably Gambit. You know, we'll see.
They would be smart to keep it small at first.
I agree.
One of the things that I think these movies, to get back to the movies we're actually talking about, do a pretty good job with, but maybe struggled a little more with in the first, is they had so many characters all at once, they didn't know what to do with a lot of them.
Sure.
So a lot of time, these guys are just standing around waiting to use their powers, but they don't really have a character.
Yeah.
If Marvel is smart, Professor X plus four or five X-Men, and maybe Magneto isn't even the villain at first. Maybe it's something else. And they're fighting whatever. And just keep it really simple, and then introduce more stuff. Do I trust that Marvel can do that these days? I do not.
So they order an airstrike on the Blackbird, and Jean like diverts one of the missiles. They do some shenanigans with weather, get shot down, and they think this is the end. Well, Magneto, we'll backtrack to that. He has been sprung now from Mystique, and the way she did that is the security guard there, who's a fat schlub, is sitting at the bar and she's hitting on him.
I thought he was about to have the night of his life.
Yeah, and it's Rebecca Romijn Stamos as is, not as Mystique.
That tells you how beautiful she's looking.
Yeah, so, and she wants to fuck him on the toilet, which, like, he's got to be like, something's not right here.
I remember as a little kid seeing this scene and thinking, what a gross scene. And as an adult, honestly, I'm still like, what a gross scene. this is the type of scene that makes me want to, like, take a shower.
If she dragged you into that toilet, your pants would be off.
Of course. Don't lie. I'm not saying they wouldn't be. I'm talking about the whole thing, including like him as just, he is like the fat schlub. She goes to like pull his pants down at one point and he has like the grossest underwear ever on.
Yeah.
And I'm just, the whole thing, I'm just like, oh.
It is dirty.
God, it's filthy. Yeah.
It is.
Just the whole thing just makes you feel gross. Having said that, yes, if I was at that truck stop or wherever we are and she's truck into stop. It. I'd be like, do whatever you want, Rebecca Romijn.
Yeah. She knocks him out, though, and injects him with something, which we find out is iron in his blood.
Yeah.
So Magneto kills this guy fucking brutally.
Rips the iron out of him. You just see little dust pellets of blood being pulled out of him. And
he's deader than shit.
Yeah. I love this scene. I think this really is a cool. I love a good prison break, and this is a good prison break.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then Magneto happens to be in the forest in the middle of nowhere and saves the Blackbird from crashing.
What a coincidence.
And then they got to team up.
Yeah, I like that they team up. I like the idea of the X-Men and Magneto, because Magneto doesn't have there is no Brotherhood of Mutants anymore. It's him and Mystique. Let me ask you something about that. As a kid, I always thought Magneto and Mystique were like, you know, they were a couple. They were like sexually attracted to each other, uh-huh. And they were on the same side. Because uh-huh. We don't really know how old Mystique is. She could be 60, 70 years old. I had like a different vibe from it now. And maybe it's just because I know Ian McKellen is gay. But I had Magneto, I was getting vibes of more of him just being like, your sassy gay uncle. And she just likes that. What do you think? How'd you read it?
I think she just follows Magneto's message.
Okay, so she's just there for the...
She believes in that, yeah.
Oh, I was getting more than the message. They're either doing it, or she's, like, attracted to him in another way.
Really?
That's the vibe I always got, yeah. Huh. That she's into the message, but she's also into him.
I didn't get that.
Interesting, okay.
In the meantime, Professor X is being held...
Maybe I was just horny in 2003. I don't know.
He's being held by Stryker in his secret lair, and... His son turns out to be Mastermind from the comics, even though they kind of, it's not exactly the presentation you get in the comics, but, and he's, I guess, the biggest match Professor Xavier has for his telepathy.
Yeah. So he has, I don't know if he has telepathy exactly, but he can implant things into your brain. He can make you think you're places you're not, make you think you're a person you're not. And in that, he can basically control you. It's really interesting. It's a frightening power.
I want to talk about this set. So the set for Stryker's underground lair was built in an old Sears warehouse and was the largest set in North America.
Wow.
It involved over 60 miles of cable and was so large that cast and crew members used bicycles to get them to and from the bathroom as quickly as possible. Even then, the production only used about half the space in the warehouse.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It shows. It feels big. Again, this is old-fashioned movie making. They built a set and everybody just ran around it. And
they did CGI Rebecca Romijn Stamos's contacts in this one versus her wearing actual contact lenses.
Okay.
Same with Halle Berry. Well, no, they did her in the first one too. They CGI'd hers.
Well, that seems horribly uncomfortable. So good for them.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So Stryker is building his own Cerebro. And
this is another thing he tortured out of Magneto. Because Magneto helped build Cerebro. So now he has a sort of knockoff Cerebro that looks like it's just good enough to get the job done. It's not really complete.
Yeah.
It's the Death Star in Return of the Jedi.
Exactly.
I'm using a lot of Star Wars references tonight.
It all lines up.
Yeah.
So Magneto and them are coming up with a plan in the forest, and there's one point where Mystique tries to seduce Wolverine. After Wolverine kisses Jean Grey, they start teasing that romance again. You know, and he throws her out of the tent.
I actually forgot about that scene.
And then We get that interaction where Magneto is talking to Pyro, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, that's his way to kind of recruit him, is kind of talk him up.
It's a pretty long scene too. We only played a clip of it, but that is probably my favorite scene of the movie. I like how in his head Magneto gets right away.
Yeah.
And how well, it's just, again, it helps that Sir Ian McKellen is playing this role because he's playing it so perfectly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They come up with this plan. They get into the base. And Professor X is tricked into targeting
mutants. It's all the mutants. The idea is use Cerebro. We learn earlier in the movie that if Professor X concentrates on any one mutant too hard, he can kill them.
Yeah.
So now they're going to use Cerebro to boost his power and say, okay, focus on all the mutants. The idea being they're going to kill all of them at once.
And they all start getting headaches except for Magneto, who's wearing the helmet.
Yes.
He goes in, stops Mastermind, and instead tricks him, or Mystique morphs into Stryker. Tells him to reverse it and kill all the humans. And then he leaves him there to die.
Mm-hmm.
In the original script, Magneto was going to save Professor X.
Oh, okay.
I actually feel like that may have been more true to the character. Because these two are not really trying to kill each other.
You're right. They're not. I don't know. It's very devious, obviously. But we know that Magneto will sacrifice, at least this version of Magneto, movie Magneto, will sacrifice people to achieve his goals. We brought it up in the first movie. He was going to let Rogue die to achieve his goal.
That's true.
Now, obviously, he and Xavier are old, close friends, and so maybe that might be a little bit tougher on him. But I don't know. I didn't feel like it was out of character for him to leave somebody to die.
Well, it's not somebody. It's Charles.
Of course. It's so different.
That's kind of my take on it, but...
It's devious. It's very deep. I mean, yeah, there's no coming back from that one. Yeah. They're not going to be playing chess later, being like, gotcha again, old buddy. That's...
Except they do.
we'll talk about that. But and much like Magneto in the first movie, guess who else is kind of a coward? William Stryker, because he's leaving all of his men there to die and he's going to escape.
So the dam has been busted because Cyclops is brainwashed.
He's been brainwashed and he's fighting.
And now all of a sudden his optic beams are strong enough to blow a hole into a damn wall.
Yeah. They couldn't kill somebody earlier. They just sort of knocked him over.
The original script was to have Cyclops blind Jean Grey. And it said they gave her a broken leg.
Okay. I don't know what that, like, I don't get it. What's the difference? She's going to die in 5 minutes anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right.
Let's talk about this Lady Deathstrike fight with Wolverine.
Oh, man. This one's impact. This is the one I was talking about. I think this is the only mutant-on-mutant fight. Well, we get a little bit of Cyclops and Jean Grey, I guess, but this is the one. This is a very good fight scene.
I agree.
And how it ends, it's not super long, which I like. Again, not to always be comparing to modern MCU, but a lot of modern MCU fights just feel like they go on forever. This one's pretty quick. And the only way he realizes he can kill her, because she also is a healing mutant who has been experimented on with adamantium and is almost certainly under Stryker's influence with his little drug, is to pump her full of adamantium. They're in the room where Wolverine and her presumably had their procedures. And the only way he figures out finally to kill her is to shoot her up with all the liquid adamantium and watch her die slowly and sink to the bottom of the...
Yeah.
Water tank where they were both kept. It's kind of horrific.
Absolutely. So the way they save Professor X, Nightcrawler teleports Storm in there. Storm makes it very cold. And they get rid of Mastermind. They pretty much leave him there to die.
Well, he's kind of being an asshole, so I'd probably leave him there to die too.
Indeed. As they're trying to escape, though, the jet's not working. This is where we get this scene where Jean comes off the plane... Starts the jet, throws it in the air, tells Cyclops through Professor X, goodbye, this is the only way, I love you, blah, blah, blah. Give us your take.
I have a lot of thoughts on this scene. As I was watching this, I'll be honest, I got a little choked up. Thought it was very emotional. I thought the acting was very, very good.
It was.
James Marsden and Hugh Jackman playing off each other was really pulling me into it. And then all at once I went, hey, wait a minute, like... If Jean Grey was going to pull this off, she decided her best course of action was to get out of the jet. The water is now, the dam has busted. The water is rushing towards them. So she gets out of the jet. She has to control the jet with her mind. She has to stop the water with her mind. She has to stop the mutants from being able to use their powers so they can't come and get her. Like, she stops Nightcrawler from being able to teleport. And she has to possess Professor X or use telepathy to talk to him, to talk to Scott. It seems like it would have been a lot easier for her to just levitate the jet 40 feet to the right and miss the water. And then they figure out the engines later. Because you see a wide shot and there's forest off to the side. She could have just lifted him up.
Yeah.
She was doing it anyway.
Right.
So contrived is the word I'm going to use. And if we're being honest, this is probably the first taste of the shit that is to come. Because this is just bad writing, in my opinion. I know some people really like the scene, but to me, it struck me immediately as this was bad writing. She could have just, there was a much easier solution to this scene.
So I meant to bring this up in the last podcast, or I'm sorry, the Sidekicks podcast, but we had recorded a Predator episode that was corrupted and I could not regain. So Matt was like, any luck? And I sent him this clip of Cyclops and Wolverine.
She's gone.
Holding each other. She's gone. She's gone. You don't say that. It's great acting.
It is great acting. It's one of those things that where if you stop to think about it for a minute, you're like, wait, this didn't have to happen.
The last scene is in the mansion. Wolverine and Cyclops are talking to Professor X. Did you notice a difference in Hugh Jackman's hair?
No.
Way more pointier, like the comics.
Oh, okay. I'll have to go back and look.
Because he had a wig on because he was filming Van Helsing for this scene.
Of course he did. Okay.
Yeah. So.
Oh, man, I love bad wigs in movies. I'll have to go back and watch.
Yes, you will.
Okay.
And then Professor X like kind of gets a premonition at the end. And they go over the lake. And you see a little mark of the Phoenix.
Oh, no.
So Jean is... It's foreshadowing that the Phoenix Force will be in the next X-Men.
And as we know about X-Men movies, anytime the Phoenix is involved, it's a mark of quality.
Yeah, exactly.
Just, yeah, they panned over the lake and you just heard somebody yell, "Bitch, that was a bad plan!"
Yeah, exactly. So...
That's the only part of the movie I don't like, is that end.
Does it hold up?
Oh, yeah, I was shocked. Much like the first, you know, I fully went into it thinking, okay, this movie, again, is still very highly regarded. I loved it as a kid. Will it hold up? The first one did. Okay, good. Surely this one will be fine. I enjoyed it so much. I wanted to watch it again before we recorded. I just didn't have time.
See, what's interesting for me is I enjoyed watching the first one more than the second one this time around.
Interesting.
I don't know why. I think they're both very good.
Yeah,
we know what we're getting next week.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah.
There's no doubt. Like,
right, we know what's coming.
Yeah.
I think we talked about that with the first, that I kind of agree with you. I got hit with that big wave of nostalgia with the
first.
Maybe
that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. But for this one, I just thought, oh no, this is a really good movie. As I was watching, I texted you and I said, this is just a really good movie that mutants happen to show up in.
One scene I forgot to touch on, which was, I think, a great scene, was when the president is about to go on
and
announce the Mutant Registration Act.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, everybody freezes. There's a big storm outside. Lights go out. He turns around and comes, and the lights come back on, but it's still dark.
Mm-hmm.
And all the X-Men are in his office.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad you brought that scene up. They're all in his office, but other than Professor X, nobody in that room is being conciliatory. They all look super menacing.
Yes.
Nightcrawler, who just tried to kill the president, instead of being like, "I'm not here to harm you," he's like perched up top in shadows, like baring his fangs. I'm like, yeah, I'd still be afraid of you.
100%.
Like, none of you are trying to bridge this gap here, except Professor X. But I guess he's the old diplomat. Yeah, and we get Professor X hands the president over documentation that William Stryker was conducting all this secret stuff, and I like that. To me, that should have been the ending instead of Jean committing suicide for no reason.
I agree. You're absolutely right. Like the whole Jean thing to me was completely unnecessary. I don't know what Bryan Singer had planned for the third one because he's clearly setting it up.
You know what? I don't know either. That'd be really interesting. Maybe we'll look into that before we do the third and see if there's anything.
Definitely wasn't what we got.
Well, no, it definitely wasn't what we got. I mean, I'm sure his plan wasn't to hand the franchise off to famously hack director Brett Ratner and say, go ahead and fuck this up forever. Go ahead, Brett, make X-Men bad for 10 years.
Yeah.
But that's what we got. Yeah. And Bryan Singer went off and did it. You know, it's kind of reminds me of what happened at the end of the Dark Knight trilogy, where Nolan like really didn't want to come back and do that third movie. He was over it. And I don't know, maybe it's a similar situation with Bryan Singer. For as much fun as we've poked at Bryan Singer, again, nothing illegal. He's a great director. I mean, obviously I wish he would have stuck around for the third and ended this trilogy properly, but yeah. not what we got. I'd be fascinated to see what he was thinking.
You know, if you're stumbling on in this podcast and you're a fairly young lad and all you know is MCU, I implore you to go back and watch these movies because yes. This was really something special when these first two came out.
These were incredible. I think they hold up. I would encourage you to watch these and watch Raimi Spider-Man 1 and 2.
Yeah, which we'll get to down the road as well.
For sure going to do those because I probably watched the first Spider-Man movie way more than I saw the X-Men movies.
Same trajectory, though. By the third one, they're like, what the fuck were they thinking?
What happened?
And the second one is like, it's
Empire Strikes Back.
Empire Strikes Back.
It's great. Yeah. It's to me, it's like X-Men. It's like the first one's good. It's a lot of fun. But the second one is like the good one.
Yeah.
And then you get to the third and they just shit the bed.
Yeah.
And in the case of Spider-Man, there's less excuse because Raimi is still on board. And wanted to keep going. He wanted to do Spider-Man 4. So I don't know what happened to Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
And much like X-Men, I've only seen Spider-Man 3 once.
Okay.
So we'll revisit those.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I think... Not only do I think these hold up, I would say X2 is my favorite superhero movie ever.
Wow.
And it's always been like The Dark Knight. I loved the new Batman. Ant-Man, of course. Incredible. I think this is the one because the my two favorite Batman movies, The Batman and The Dark Knight, they barely feel like comic book movies.
Sure.
As good as they are, The Dark Knight is basically just Heat and The Batman is a little more comic booky, but it's still so grounded. This is actual mutants with powers doing very silly things in a very serious way, and it's a good movie, but it's also fun and it's got the little actiony stuff.
It's got everything.
Got a little bit of everything. I think it's my favorite.
Well, we will see you guys next week for The Last Stand.
God be with us. Now, we've been very sober on these thus far.
Cannot promise
that because when we jump on the mics next, there's probably going to have been a few beers had while we watch the masterpiece that is X-Men The Last Stand.
I can't wait. All right. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.